You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Last November's Woolsey Fire burned down hundreds of homes in Los Angeles and Ventura counties. This is not one of them.
We're in front of a house we own on Las Flores Canyon Road.
That's Paul Grisanti. He and his wife, Sarah, sell real estate in Malibu. The house they're standing in front of has a Mediterranean design, 2,400 square feet, one level, four bedrooms, four bathrooms. And Grisanti points out it's unlikely to burn if another fire like the Woolsey comes through.
It's got interior sprinklers. It's got a tile roof. It's a stucco wall. The eaves are enclosed. And we are not on a raised foundation, so there's not a situation where embers can get underneath the house. And around us, you can see we have all this landscaping, which is good. There's a little creek on the other side of that. This is a moister area. So it's not a high fire danger area.
Not a high fire danger area, which is why the Grisantis were surprised by a letter that they received last month from their home insurance company. KCRW's Avishai Artsy has the story.
Sarah Grisanti pulls out a manila folder stuffed with documents related to this house, which they bought a couple years ago. She shows me the forms one by one.
In July 3rd of 2019, we received a notice of non-renewal of insurance. And we called our agent and said, what's going on? And he said, I'm going to find you another policy that's comparable to the one you had before because insurance providers are pulling out of Malibu. Our original insurance policy cost $3,760 a year. The new coverage would cost us $15,513 a year.
Okay, so you're now paying four times the amount as before.
That's right. I was shocked, to be honest with you, and I didn't understand why here in the eastern side of Malibu, that was not affected by the fire, we're getting hit so badly. But another house I know right next to the fire is still keeping its insurance policy, and the premium is exactly the same as it was before. It's about $3,500. Why are we on the east end being punished for what happened on the west end? Or why is anybody being punished at all?
The Grisantis are far from alone in getting dropped from their policies. California's fires are getting bigger and stronger, and insurance companies are fleeing in droves.
It's kind of a bean counter thing. You know, they're looking at the dollars and cents, and they're saying, oh my gosh, we've got to get out of this.
Pat Durland leads workshops for homeowners on how to protect their homes from fire. He thinks insurance companies are overreacting.
Unfortunately, some of them pull the rug out from under their clients.
Now, plenty of California residents have not seen a change in their insurance policies, but the state's Department of Insurance says consumer complaints about non-renewals in high fire-risk counties are up nearly 600% since 2010. Among those who are seeing rate increases, some Malibu residents are affected more than others.
The regular Malibu folks, the ones that aren't the wealthy, the ones that have been here since the 60s or 70s, that paid off their mortgages, lived modestly, those folks are the ones that are going to be impacted by the rate increases on the insurance.
This is Malibu Mayor Jefferson Wagner, known to locals as Zuma J.
The wealthy Malibu, the other Malibu, it's just another nuisance. It's just like, oh, a few thousand dollars more a year. Well, that's just the price of doing business. So of the two Malibus, the lower end Malibu, the ones that work every day, we are going to suffer.
Wagner runs Zuma J's surf shop right off Pacific Coast Highway, and he's going through this insurance nightmare himself.
My provider, Allstate, for insurance declined my claim, and now we're in an errors and omissions lawsuit with Allstate.
Wagner had a policy with Allstate for 10 years. Then his home burned to the ground in the November Woolsey fire.
Yeah, the embers landed on the roof. The heat from the storm melted the ladder, and I couldn't lob the water up onto the roof. I didn't have enough pressure. If I had access to the roof and had water pressure, I would have been successful. I did save my neighbor's home and my garage.
Where are you living now?
In a tough shed. Yeah.
Wow. 10 by 12.
That's pretty small.
Yeah. It's that or the daughter's condo.
Now, you're not just a homeowner, you're also the mayor. Are you hearing this story from a lot of residents of the city?
Yes, I've been contacted via email and phone and face-to-face by no fewer than 20 people in my community who are going through the same issues that I am, either a denial of part of the claim or an increase in rates on their new policies now that we're coming up for renewal.
Wagner was hospitalized for smoke inhalation while trying to keep his house from burning down. Now he's fighting Allstate in court and hoping they'll pay to rebuild his house exactly as it was. KCRW reached out to Lloyd's of London, Allstate, Farmers Insurance, State Farm, but only State Farm replied with a statement, which read in part, "We must find the appropriate balance between our exposure to loss, the resources available to maintain a quality level of service, and our ability to meet our financial obligations to pay claims." Mark Secknan agrees. He's a spokesman for the American Property Casualty Insurance Association. That's an industry trade group.
Well, I think you have to go back to the basic premise of the California insurance system, which is risk-based. So that's partially why we have seen such a dramatic change in the environment in the last 3 years. You've seen a lot of insurance companies reevaluate their risk. Companies also need to make sure that they don't have too much risk in a particular area. So they need to make sure that they're there to pay claims for consumers when necessary.
Secknan points out that the state does offer a fallback, the California Fair Plan. It only offers the most basic fire protection, not theft or water damage or liability. You'd have to buy those separately. It costs more than a traditional policy, and it only insures homeowners for up to $1.5 million in losses. In a place like Malibu, says Sarah Grisanti, that doesn't go very far.
The maximum payout is well below what people paid for their house. So they aren't even going to be able to rebuild it on the land for what that gives you.
That said, the state's Department of Insurance has seen a 25% increase in Fair Plan usage in higher risk regions of California in just 4 years. The housing market has been hammered by two consecutive record-breaking fire seasons. There were 15 major wildfires last year in California, and they cost insurance companies $24 billion. Malibu real estate agent Paul Grisanti hopes the exodus of insurance companies from the area is just temporary.
The insurance companies have a herd mentality, and they've all decided it's safer on the other side of the pasture. But after the people who stay in get to eat all the nice juicy clover over here for a couple of years, everybody else is going to go, "Oh my gosh, why aren't we getting that nice juicy clover?" And they will come over and start grazing here as well. And hopefully if there's three or four different companies who want our premiums, then there will be some price competition, which there isn't at the moment.
For KCRW, I'm Avishai Artsy.
Well, it's been 9 months since the Woolsey Fire hit and destroyed nearly 500 single-family homes in and around Malibu. So what's happened since then? Mikey Pearson sits on the Malibu City Council. He's with us right now on the line. Hi, Mikey.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm well. Those were some pretty tough days for you guys.
Yeah, they were indeed. They were very intense, very consequential, very traumatic, but we go forward.
There were roughly 500 homes destroyed in the Woolsey Fire. How many are getting rebuilt, or at least how many have broken ground to get rebuilt now, nearly a year later?
So we have 14 homes under construction, and that's going well, actually. We now have another 119 that have been approved, and then obviously more behind that going through the approval process. This was a traumatic event, and it's taken most people a while to even sort of get into the process, which is a very difficult process. So to be this far along is probably ahead of the schedule we thought would happen. So in many ways, it's going very well, but I think for people rebuilding, it's a difficult time. It's a very difficult time.
The city, Mikey, decided that it would fast-track permitting, which would allow people to rebuild quickly, as you say, this process to get it underway. That can mean, though, building homes that are not up to code when it comes to fire safety. Do you think that's a little short-sighted, especially in a place that has burned before?
It doesn't actually mean that at all. Not even one bit. So the fire codes for rebuilding, that doesn't change one bit. What did change is we made a deal with the Coastal Commission that if you built a like for like, so the same square footage in the same place, or a like for like plus 10%, you can, you know, a little bit bigger, they were going to treat that essentially like a remodel. And but yet it still has to conform with all the modern codes. So the homes that are being rebuilt are built to every single standard of any other brand new home. They just got to short circuit the coastal development process, which saves, you know, at least a year in the development.
Do you think in a situation like this that maybe and I know you used to be on the Planning Commission in the city, which does approve building permits. Is this the time to stand back and be like, all right, well, obviously we have a lot of things going on. There's climate change. Malibu has burned before. We had a really bad fire last year. Do we think or rethink where we let people build or rebuild?
I think if we're going to build in a high fire zone, you have to have houses that can survive in a high fire zone. So ultimately, if I had to have my magic wand, we would build houses that were safe spaces. So when the fire came, you actually stayed in the house because it was the safest place around. We're clearly not there. So to answer your question on where we build, it is a very, very good question. And reality in Malibu, it's been more answered than we think. There's not that many more buildable lots. There are some, but there's not a ton. So we aren't really going to expand the city's footprint into the future. It's pretty well established at this point.
How do you build, though, a fireproof home?
Well, fire resistance, a better term. No, you know what? There's a lot involved. The majority of homes that burn down, the vast majority that burn down in the Woolsey Fire, did not burn from flames. They burned down from embers. So understanding how to have a home that can withstand an ember storm is more important than anything else in resiliency. The right landscaping, it turns out, is very important. We've learned a lot about that. You don't want to denude the area because that creates sort of an ember highway straight into your house. You want the right kind of landscaping to help capture embers. And then you have to build the right way, of course. You don't have wood chips and wood decks and trellises with bougainvillea up against the house. You've got to make sure there's nowhere for embers to make perch on your house or get into your house, say through the old-fashioned vents that let them in or any other way they can get in and take hold. Also, you can't let it get too hot next to your house, say a tree or something that catches fire, and just the heat alone can bust inside your house. So things like metal roofs, hardy board, stucco, with the right landscaping and the right location away from direct contact with flame, your odds on your house surviving are actually quite high.
Do you force people or encourage people to rebuild in a safer way with some of those items?
Absolutely, absolutely. I think we're in some ways a little more on the encourage side, and we will head towards more the force side as we update our codes going forward. I've been really a strong proponent of having people look at modular and prefab housing, and quite a few residents are, because it is definitely very easy to build a house like that and make it more resilient.
We've been talking on this program today about insurance and hearing a lot of people who say that their home insurance has become a lot more expensive since the Woolsey Fire. What about your insurance rates? Have they gone up?
You know what's interesting? They did, but briefly, when I remodeled my house and we made it very fire resilient about 3 years ago, I was having trouble getting insurance that I wanted, and I convinced State Farm to come out because I told them how fire resistant it was. I ended up getting my insurance for about $250 a month. When the fire came through, I was fine, though I did have smoke damage, and my rate was raised to $295 a month. So compared to the other stories I'm hearing, at this point, mine's worked out pretty well, but I wasn't even near my house during the fire because I knew it wasn't going to burn down. And that's a really good feeling in a massive event like the Woolsey Fire.
You knew that your house wasn't going to burn down.
That's what I felt. I knew a lot of the other homes in my neighborhood were older and were a lot more vulnerable, and that's where I spent my time.
Mikey, I'm going to ask you that question that annoys the heck out of a lot of people. In earthquake zones, why do you live there? In hurricane zones, why do you live along the coast? Why do you continue to live in a place that's so volatile?
You know, Malibu is a beautiful, wonderful place to live for many reasons, both the people and the nature and the beauty, the beaches, the mountains. And yes, there is risk. That's a good point. I think for most people, and they probably wouldn't like to hear this, people have very short memories. They tend to, you know, a year after a fire, they're wanting more soccer fields instead of more fire safety. So that concerns me. And I think for old Malibu, as we call it, old Malibu people like myself, we're used to staying and sort of dealing with fires. But houses have been lost for many years, but I think the overall attitude in Malibu has been it's something we have to deal with, and we have.
But then something catastrophic happens, like the Woolsey Fire, and all of a sudden the state is going to have to ramp up money, and firefighters are going to have to be called in to fix this, and we're going to have to pay more firefighters, and the costs are prohibitive, and everybody else is paying for you to live in a pretty vulnerable zone.
You know, as I go around town now trying to help people get ready, what I tell them, because a lot of people want the government to do more, whatever agency it is, and my look at that is, what are you going to do to save your house? Because I don't disagree with you. We need to build houses that are resilient. We can't expect anyone to come on a 15-mile fire front and save your house. That's just not going to happen. Nobody came to my neighborhood. We took care of our neighborhood. So you're right. You raise really valid points that are really important in this new normal that we're in that need to be addressed. And in my opinion, if you're going to live in a high fire zone, you better build a house that most likely can't burn down.
Mikey Pearson, Malibu City Councilman, volunteer firefighter. Mikey, thank you for your time. We appreciate it.
My pleasure, and talk to you soon.
Well, coming up, questions are surrounding the deaths of three people in Orange County Sheriff's custody. The latest ahead on KCRW's Greater LA.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. In Orange County, there's been a rash of deaths inside the jail system, and the Sheriff's Department, which runs those jails, isn't giving very many details about why those people died in their custody. Even family members aren't being told much. Is it yet another scandal at OC jails? It's Monday. Gustavo Arellano is with us right now for KCRW's Orange County Line. Hey, Gustavo.
Hola, Steve.
Who are the folks that died in custody? Do we know anything about them?
We know next to little. I mean, it was two men, and the way they died, people still don't know. Even family members are saying the sheriff's department hasn't talked to us. There was one case where a woman committed suicide, but she did this a day before she was supposed to be released from the Orange County jail. So a lot of these family members, and not just family members, but activists, are going to the Board of Supervisors and saying, look, this is a problem that's been going on in the Orange County jails, these unnecessary deaths for almost a decade now. And the fact that they're still continuing despite all the scrutiny to the jails in Orange County after recent embarrassments is just unconscionable.
This comes a couple of years after there was a death. I think they put one inmate, a former homeless inmate, in with a man who had confessed to killing homeless people. That was a big black eye on the jail system, wasn't it?
Oh, my Lord. I mean, the Orange County jails, here's the top three moments of the past couple of years in terms of embarrassment. The gentleman, the formerly homeless man, was Danny Pham. He was a nonviolent offender who was put in the same cell as, a guy who admitted to killing people, and then that guy ended up murdering Danny Pham. You had, of course, the infamous breakout of the Orange County jail led by a guy named Hassan Nayeri, who just recently got convicted for this really gruesome kidnap and torture of a marijuana dealer out in the desert. And then a couple years ago, you had the inmate suicide of Izzy Ocampo. Izzy Ocampo, of course, was a serial killer of homeless people. He was on suicide watch, and yet he still committed suicide because what happened was he would collect these little packets of Ajax that he would request from these deputies, and they never noticed that he was gathering enough so he would be able to swallow them and commit suicide. And this is, of course, on top of the whole jailhouse snitch scandal. So it's just one, just embarrassment after embarrassment for the deputy, and tragedy after tragedy for all these families of these people who die or commit suicide.
I want to get back to the people who have died recently this year at the jail system. A federal judge has actually criticized the jails for their treatment of people with mental health issues. You mentioned a couple of these folks were or had been diagnosed with mental health issues. What did that judge have to say?
He pointed out that in the Orange County jails, inmates who have verifiable mental problems, sometimes all they could do is spend 5 minutes with a psychiatrist, maybe once a month or whatever. And so he's calling, look, like these, a lot of these deaths are completely unnecessary because these facilities should have these psychiatrists doing their jobs. But that's a federal judge. For the past 3 years, the Orange County grand jury has issued three separate reports just blasting the jail system in Orange County, not just for the lack of psychiatrists, also for lack of training, also just for bad conditions for all these inmates.
That grand jury report, by the way, saying that what was it? Over the past 3 years, 44% of custodial deaths in the jail system in OC may have been preventable.
Yeah, and it's not like there's more Orange County jail deaths than ever before, but a lot of these things are preventable if the deputies either did their job or if there was more funding given to these jails. But this is just a jailhouse that has always had problems but just can never fix them because it seems no one outside activists and grand juries and a federal judge in Orange County seems to care about this.
The person who investigates these deaths, Gustavo, is the county coroner. But back in April, the sheriff was given sole control of the Orange County Crime Lab, which means he actually oversees the coroner's office. So the sheriff oversees the Orange County jail system, also oversees the coroner's office, and that coroner's office is going to be doing investigations on these deaths.
Who sheriffs the sheriffs? In this case, it's Don Barnes. Don Barnes, he ran saying that he was going to reform a system that he said had some problems. But the way Orange County is, it's a sheriff coroner's office. And so the sheriff does the sheriffing part, but also investigates all deaths or whatever. So for activists, they're saying that there should be two completely separate departments. And we'll see how much anger there is from the public outside of the family members and a couple of activists. But hey, you know, at one point people thought Tony Rakakis and Sandra Hutchins were going to be elected until they wanted to, and they're neither of them are in office anymore.
This all came up at a Board of Supervisors meeting. What did the supervisors have to say?
As usual, they just say, thank you for your comments, and nothing happened. But if they'll say anything at all, they'll say, well, we really can't say anything because there's an ongoing investigation. But, you know, bring some relief to these families. At least say, we got to reform this jail so no more unnecessary deaths happen.
Gustavo Arellano writes for the LA Times and with us on Greater LA. Gustavo, thanks.
Gracias.
And before we leave you today, we want to take a moment to remember our friend and colleague Joe Frank, who passed away last year, whose birthday is today. He would have been 81 years old. Now, Joe was unique in every sense of the word, and words were what made him so extraordinary. Here he is with a snippet from one of his verbal anthems, this one called Pact with God.
And I love those tropical storms. Huge, dark clouds rolling in over the countryside. And the sound of the rain outside my window. And I think of the thunder as the voice of my father, which does not frighten me. It's the only way he knows how to speak. would speak softly if he could.
Just like the thunder. Happy birthday, Joe. Wherever you are, you will always be indelibly connected to KCRW, to us, and to Greater LA. We miss you. That's it for us today. Tomorrow, the school year starts again for LAUSD. What that means for you on your commute and why it means so many more cars and not school buses on the road. Coming up next on KCRW, it's The Business with Kim Masters, Catherine Barnes, Jenna Cagle, Sarah Pellegrini, Sonia Geis, PJ Shahamat, Phil Richards, Ray Guarna, and Christian Bordahl make this show happen. We're at kcrw.com/greaterLA. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great day.